Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Russian Doll Podcast. I don't know if we've done this one already, but I think this is the first time we'll be talking about these episodes. My name is Ariel, and I am joined by my sweet birthday babies. I will never stop saying that. I'm sorry if it gets annoying. Grace and Marissa.
Hi.
Hey.
We're here. We're at the party.
It's a pretty hopping party.
Yeah, it's great.
It is very hopping. I mean, I feel like there's a little, the music is a little bit repetitive at times, but...
Can be.
You know.
Definite vibe. It's right, a good one.
With Natasha Lyonne and Greta Lee there, I'm sure there's a lot of fun to be had.
Yeah.
We're here to recap episodes 1 and 2 of the first season, which aired in 2019. So if you're, you know, we said this on the kickoff podcast, we kind of recommend that you watch the whole season if you want, before you listen to these, because we have seen these episodes. This is a rewatch for us. You know, we won't be too spoilery, but we will, you know, there might be something that we spoil accidentally, not meaning to. So just, you know, proceed with caution. We will try to be as sensitive to that as possible.
Yeah.
We should just say season 2 premieres on April 20th. So have that on your calendar. That is a very important date for a lot of people for a lot of reasons. And we'll be joining you basically all these days leading up to it. And for days after, we'll be obviously covering, I think it goes without saying, but covering season 2. And so this is about refreshing our memories.
Splashing our face with water at the sink.
Yes.
Water with, and then like having to exit by pulling on a gun. Like, is that, has that ever happened to you, Marissa? Have you ever walked into a bathroom and then like you have to like shoot a gun?
As many times as I've, one, been in bathrooms, two, talked about bathrooms on podcasts, I have not experienced either one of these.
It's one of the more unique door handles I've ever seen.
Any of the things. Okay. What about you, Grace? Any like blue crystal balls of light looking like portals?
No, but it is a very cool door, I have to admit. They did a great job. Yeah,
they are very proud of it, both in the show, and they should be, the props people should be very proud of it as well, creating this universe. And also the bathroom is huge, I should say.
Like, well, and like super well decorated, like outside of the door, like it's very very nice. I would like that bathroom.
Do you know what Greta does? Her apartment is huge.
She is, I think she's like a cocaine dealer. No, I'm totally kidding.
Fair.
I do not know what.
It's very Maxine. I called her Greta.
Her name's Greta. Sorry. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. I think they call her Max, but her full name is Maxine.
I think she's an artist.
Yes, right, because she says, I create, or like, I think of the thing, and then the other woman is like, oh, you create, I think of the idea, and you execute it, basically.
Yes.
Just a couple of quick housekeeping things. This is going to be on the Binge Show Recaps feed. You should feel free to subscribe if you don't want to miss any of our Russian Doll podcasts, or just any podcasts on that feed, but certainly these, if that's important to you. postshowrecaps.com/binge is the URL for your RSS podcatcher needs. Please proceed cautiously, because I'm gonna have probably way too much fun recapping these things with my two friends, and you should find some friends that you feel safe going on this journey with, and maybe watching alongside, even if it's virtually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a fun group project.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So now we will go into full spoilers. So, you know, be aware, because this is a lovely show and we wouldn't want to spoil anything. Part of the fun of it is the experience. So, Marissa, where do we find ourselves in the beginning?
Well, in the bathroom. As per usual. We're in the bathroom. Yeah. We've got
classic.
But I have to say, this opening is super iconic. So we've got Natasha Lyonne standing at the sink, we don't know who she is. We don't know anything about her, but we know it's Natasha Lyonne. She's got her hair. She's all there and she's splashing water on her face, gripping the sink. Like you can tell she's getting ready for something. And the letters of Russian Doll pop up on the screen. It's very like movie house. It's, you know, something cool is coming. And she's like in this really, as we talked about before, super awesome bathroom.
Yeah, super cool. She looks super cool. She's in a super cool bathroom and we'll get some super cool music. So it's all cool, you know? It's the vibe of the show so far. Cool.
I'm hearing a lot of cool, and I can't say that I disagree.
Cool boys. Yeah. Real cool.
Real cool. And there's a gun, actually. Speaking of that scene. So it's all related.
Yeah.
So yes, they're in the bathroom. And it looks, I mean, I've already mentioned it way too many times, but like the image of that. I call it a portal, like that green or that blue, excuse me, like crystal structure on the back of the door is so, especially on a rewatch, is so captivating. And you just wonder, you know, like what it can mean, what it does mean.
Well, I think it like serves the purpose of this is going to be weird. Like if you're, you know, it reminded me of something in Doctor Who. If you've watched Doctor Who before, there's like a thing in the wall. It's just like you don't know what it is. Could it be a portal? Could it be something? And as you see this and as she's walking towards it, we hear like the iconic song of this whole series by Harry Nilsson, which I heard growing up as a kid on my dad's record player. And so I was like, what is going on? It was many, many different memories coming together in this one moment for me as a viewer.
Yeah, you got to get up. You got to get up. Out. You got to do the pod. You got to before the morning or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it sets the scene so well. I feel like we talked about on the preview podcast that the show is captivating, and I feel like it's captivating immediately. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and like that song, of course, on the rewatch, I'm trying to like find any meaning out of it. Like what have do you have do either of you have any takeaways at this point around the song itself?
I mean, one thing I did think of is like the relentless nature of like the lyrics, how you kind of some of the lyrics not just build on each other, like the words repeat, but also it just keeps going and going. And as we see in these first two episodes, especially the second episode, there's just like this nonstop quality of it. And we see her trying to like take control a little bit, but there's not much control that she has over a lot of things. So I think it does feel. It feels appropriate in that sense to me.
I mean, you got to get up. It's like the relentless nature of having to keep resetting her birthday, right? She has to keep going and doing it. I think it's, you know, and I think the song works as like it being an old enough song that it's not, you know, it is not exactly one of those songs that like I think has like stood the test of time, or it's like really, but you know, there's some songs from the 70s that like I think like everybody knows, and I think this is the perfect mix of like a song that's like catchy and good while not being like it now is attached to the show in some way, more so than it just is like a popular song that has sustained itself, like on the Wikipedia page, like there's a Russian Doll section on this song, you know, so yeah.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because we're looking at a portal, super future, right? Like super futuristic looking at, and then we're hearing the song from the past. So I think even if there's no meaning towards the lyrics or anything, setting that stage in the scene is kind of like, okay, time is something we're going to be playing with in this in the series.
And the gun as well. Like it's not like she gets shot. But she does die a bunch. You know? Like she keeps, she keeps dying, right? And ends up back in this room. Yeah.
Yeah, and I love the idea too of just like we don't know what happened, and I honestly don't remember if we ever learned, but like we don't know, or we never see, rather. We learn some things that came before because of character interactions, but we don't see what happened before this moment. It's always this moment and then forward. So I think it's like she kind of initiates it by leaving the room. So like her pulling the trigger on the thing, it's kind of like whether she wants to or not, or whether she realizes it or not, she is kind of putting this thing into motion. Whether, you know, something that she doesn't understand and few of us do really. But it's fun to watch her try.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So then after we go through, She opens the door with the gun. We see, and there's a party going on. It's happy birthday. We don't know what type of party it is yet. So we see it's a party. She's walking around, and then we meet Maxine, mm-hmm. her best friend, and her. Really, she does the greeting, "Happy birthday, baby," and Nadia is just kind of like super confused at this time. She's like, "What is going on? I don't, you know, I'm not happy. Do people have crises? Do ladies have midlife crises?" She's trying to figure out. It's her birthday. She's freaking out a little bit. And Meg's like, "Here, take this joint laced with cocaine. This will help you."
Yes.
What a good friend Maxine is. Yeah. Making her a birthday chicken. She's great. Yeah.
She knows what her friend needs. And in this case, her friend needs a joint laced with cocaine, as the Israelis do, which is what Max always says every time she passes her.
Yeah. It's an Israeli cigarette. I like this, that like Nadia is a little bit, you know, she's in a weird spot in her life anyway before everything else that will happen to mm-hmm. her. It's like, yeah, do we have midlife crises? Like, I don't know, you know. And her cat is missing. Mm-hmm. Missing for a few days. So yeah, it's like, it's her birthday and you know she's gonna have fun, but you know, at the same time, you know, her life is not perfect at this moment.
Yeah, we definitely learned that she's friends with Maxine. She has a birthday. She's having like this existential crisis about it. She's lost her cat Oatmeal, and this is a cat that she like lets out. Like, she's not like, it's not a house cat. It's a cat that she lets out. And so
it's like half a deli cat, or as we would call it locally, a bodega cat. And it kind of lives with her, it kind of doesn't, but there's like a window of time that is like, now it's past that and she's worried. It's sweet. I'm allergic to cats, but I can still empathize, you know. I'm still human.
Do you have any cats, Grace? I don't have any.
No, I have one dog. So
I thought Luna was a cat. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. No. Luna would, I would love to have a cat. I do not think, I think Luna would also like to have a cat for a very short time. Unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
So she does take a puff off of this joint. We do see her do that. And then she's like, all right, let's make some choices. And she heads out into the party. And we are introduced to one of my least favorite characters in this thing. I have just labeled him Mansplainer in my notes. he is there like mansplaining about, you know, the working class and all of this stuff. But this is a choice that Nadia is making to pursue this man at this point. And her opening line is, "You got kids?"
Yeah, he does.
I do. I love that. What I love about their interaction, whether you like him or not in general, is that like, she has as much agency as him, if not more, like, and she's able to like, and I think traditionally this is not true of this kind of interaction, she's able to kind of keep him on his back foot, so to speak, and she keeps like challenging him in a way that he's clearly not used to.
Yeah, she's very much like, she's actually the one in control of this like conversation and how this
she has a goal. She knows what she's gonna do. She's like, I have a cat, you got kids, I have a cat. And we also learned she like knows about this building, which will come into play later on. She's like, this whole building used to be a school for Jews, isn't that weird? Mm-hmm. And we also learn that Nadia is a software engineer at this point, and mm-hmm. she works for a video game company, which will also come into play later. And so they're like flirting and stuff, and right before they make out, I love that it was Lisa Left Eye Lopez that brought these two together.
Yes, because she burned that guy's house down. That's such a great, it's such a great moment. You learn so much about, I mean, both of them, but you learn so much about her character in a situation like that.
Yeah.
So they leave the party and they end up going to a bodega. And Ariel, I wanted to get your perspective on this, because the bodega is an iconic New York experience, from my understanding. Here in Chicago, we have like convenience stores, but we mm-hmm. don't necessarily have bodegas. So can you kind of set the vibe for your local bodega? And is it an accurate
I mean, I will say, I think like this, I don't know that this would completely count as a bodega. Like, I think there are purists out there who would say that this is not technically a bodega. It is a deli.
Okay.
And there's only like, there are like nuanced, very, very nuanced differences, both in how bodegas look out externally and internally. They're not traditionally as big or as wide as this deli is. But the good news is that the cat has the same function, right? The cat lives there, mm-hmm. or spends a lot of time there, you know, historically, so that mice and other unwelcome things aren't around or don't feel comfortable. But this does feel very accurate to what, like, the kinds of interactions you have at this kind of store, whether it's a deli or a bodega. Lots of people coming in, lots of unwelcome sometimes interactions from people.
In various states
of sobriety.
Yeah.
That part of it all feels very, very real, and I don't think necessarily super specific to New York only.
Yeah. Okay, good. But before I go into this, I wanted to make sure it was, you know, somewhat authentic. So they walk into the bodega and Mr. Manslater Man is just like, where's the guy? Like, he doesn't even see the person behind the corner or counter.
Hate this guy.
I really do not like this guy.
Like, the guy is so clear. Like, you just hate him. And I think it's the funniest thing. I'm pretty like mansplainer agnostic, or excuse, to be clear, this specific mansplainer, this not guy. Like mansplaining in general. This guy, like, I appreciate that he appreciates her, and I appreciate that even right. though he's saying things that are stupid and annoying, he's also engaging in a way that seems like you're learning a little bit about him. I'm like, oh, what's this guy's deal? Like, I'm intrigued a little bit.
Grace, what are your thoughts on the
he sucks, right? But like, whatever. She has some reason to want to be with him. So yeah, mm-hmm. he's like, where's the guy? You know, it's like, mm-hmm. yeah. Especially then when we know that like they're they're close. So she's close with the, you know, the guy who works there.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Yeah. I didn't, to be clear, I don't like the where's the guy of it all.
Yeah.
But
that's what I'm saying. Exactly.
You know, and I think, you know, the way you treat certain kinds of workers, you know, servers, you know, people in that area of, you know, retail or customer service says a lot about you. I do genuinely believe that, but you know, they're dealing with jerks. Like, they're also dealing with the riffraff behind them. Like, he's trying to get out of there.
Yeah, that's true. But we're in there and Nadia is like, hey, have you seen oatmeal? She is asking, I forget the name of the man behind the corner. Ferran, I think, is mm-hmm. his name.
Yeah. Yeah.
Asking Ferran, do you know, have you seen oatmeal? And looks down the aisle and it looks like one of Ferran's friends is having a rough night. So this is something of interest to Nadia as she's in the bodega.
He spills everything, right? This is, yeah.
Yeah,
I couldn't tell what it looked like. He spilled a bowl of chili, but seemingly this guy picked up like dried noodles that you have to like make in the microwave still, or like instant noodles rather. So I wasn't immediately I'm like, did he throw up? Like, what did he, where did the chili come from? Like, it's
I think it's some sauced, you know, microwave heat up thing that he drops like all of them. Yeah.
Fair enough.
Like, it's definitely something Nadia is drawn to. Like, she walks back there. At the same time, we've got some other yahoos in the bodega. This is, again.
Yeah. I kind of like her New York attitude here. When she, like, yells at a guy, like, they're like, how do I get to this place? And she's like, did she, like, yell at it? And he's like, hey, we just moved here. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, they're being so, yeah, it was very, like, Janice energy from Mean Girls, where she's like, the guy says something, and she's like, your mom's chest hair. Like, it's just, like, very, like, quick and, like, easy and ready. You know, she's like, she has it in her pocket. And then she sends them. She does like,
which
I
think,
was like, yes, I want more of this. I want
to be
more
fair,
of this.
Based on the other people that she has met in the night, fair enough to like have the quick defense, you know?
Yes.
Yes.
For sure.
Yeah.
She sends them to, I think it was like 8th Street and Avenue D, and, you know, and which is a rundown something.
Yeah, like an abandoned grocery store or something.
Yes.
So, but they pick up their provisions so they can have adult entertainment evening and head back to the apartment where I wrote in my notes, again, more mansplaining is happening. And
got a very specific thing.
Yes. It's just like more of it. More is happening. And Nadia's like, I'm single and I foster a cat, so I must be looking to fill my soul. Is that what you think of me?
Yeah, and
I
thought he's like, where is he? Where is the little cat?
Yeah.
Like, oh, you must assume that it's a male cat because I am a cat lady and I'm trying, you know. Yeah, it's good. I love this line here where she's just like, I'm actually, you know, I think I'll just wait till I'm 60 and then marry someone. Then.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's just like the point of getting married is to like not die alone. So I'll just wait till like the end.
Yeah, and he's like, oh my, like, he couldn't be any more turned on by, like, all of this stuff that she's saying. She's like, why didn't you tell me this before we hooked up? She's like, I didn't think that you were into this stuff. I thought you were just a sick F, but it turns out you actually have some debt. Like, it's such a clever and interesting conversation, even just to, like, witness. I love their interaction here.
Also, she's like, I don't want to die alone. We are going to see her die alone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Talk about foreshadowing, yeah. For yes. Sure. And in the course of this conversation, she's like, I already called you an Uber. Head on out here. Like, I got no more time for you.
Boss move. Like, yes. I don't even care. It's not about the money. Like, I didn't tell you to call your own Uber. I called you the Uber because you got to go.
Yes. Yeah. And she starts going to work, but then she has run out of cigarettes, so she has to go get cigarettes. And just expecting to go for a normal walk outside. Mm-hmm. And she sees a cat across the street. She thinks, hey, could this be oatmeal? I'm thinking, hey, could this be oatmeal? And she goes to start across the street and bam, hit by a car. And I got to tell you, I jumped even though I've seen this like 800 times already.
Right. Because you don't know when it's going to happen and you don't. No, like it, the whole time you're when you know that it's coming, you're basically waiting for it the entire time. Similarly, I wasn't sure and I jumped here. I will just say, I was like, she went out to get cigarettes. You're always warned, cigarettes will kill you. And they did. They did so here because she would
That's
not
right.
have been outside. If she,
That's right. That's
if
true.
She had not got cigarettes. I just want to say that.
Do you know what I will say? Let me tell you, I've never been hit by a car. Okay.
Thank goodness. I've never been hit by a car.
I do think, does Nadia have like particularly weak bone structure or something? Like she dies very easily a lot.
Grace is like, this is the most unrealistic part of the show.
Like, I'm just of course thinking this in like D&D situation. Like her constitution score is not high at all. Like,
very few like, hit points, I think.
Yes, okay. Yeah. Yes.
Based on the neighborhood that they're in, I do believe that this cab is very much speeding. Now, okay. I do remember a campaign. I will say this as quickly as I can. There was we have this thing in New York City. There are similar things all over the world. It's called Vision Zero. Like they, you know, hopefully like no one will ever die of car accidents. Right. And part of Vision Zero was like, we're going to lower the speed, the legal speed limit from 35 to 25. And the very effective ad campaign was if you get hit by a car at 35 miles an hour, there is like an 80-ish, I don't remember the exact figures, but there was an 80-ish percent chance that you will die. Whereas if you get hit at 25 miles per hour, there's a 90% chance you'll live. So my thing is she probably got hit at least 35 miles per hour and we're in the 80-ish range.
All right. So. Okay.
And she might have brittle bones. She said in her very hot conversation with the mansplainer that like, she has the internal organs of a man twice her age. So I think all these things come into play.
She's a small person.
Getting hit by the car is not my biggest critique. We'll get there.
Oh, we will get to the other thing because they are scary in real life.
Noted. But we do zoom in here. So like we zoom in and we can see that she is indeed deceased. At this point, like when the first time I watched this, I was like, that's it. Like, that's it. That's the show. Like, what happened? Like, what's going on? But what do you know? There's a knock at the door and we're back in the bathroom. Same scene.
Gotta get out.
Gotta put water on my face. And she's like, what the heck is going on? she walks out the door. I do have to give Natasha Lyonne credit. Every single time she walks out of the bathroom with something different, and it's in a different way. And
they would have filmed this scene like a million times. Yeah. This is like these two people coming to the bathroom while she's leaving. And yeah, every time it's different.
Look, to your point, Marissa, like the way she, like, it's so realistic to our, like, we're watching it with her, right? And we're essentially experiencing this along with her because we have just as much understanding of what's happening as she does at this moment. And she so realistically plays all the emotions that you as a viewer expect you would feel going through the same thing of just like, is this it? Like the first time you wake up, you're like, I guess I'll just continue to go because what are you going to do? Like, just sit there and linger? You're like, maybe I imagined it.
Yeah.
But it's so, she does such a good job. Like, we know already and we've seen a million times how funny she can be. But now we're getting to see her play all these other more complicated emotions. And she's more than up to the task.
And it's like mostly face acting, you know, it's like mostly like, you know, oh, she's staring at herself in the mirror. Not, you know, she does speak to herself a bit like what the hell's going on, you know, but like most of the time it's just her looking in the mirror and, you know, the confusion or the realization that it's like happening again, you know, it's all really, really good.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. She goes out. She sees Max again. Max does her traditional greeting.
Sweet birthday, baby. Sorry, my friend and I used to yell this at each other a while for a long time after the show.
But this time, as opposed to having like her existential crisis of, you know, I'm getting older, she's like, wait, what was I just doing? Where am I? Isn't this weird? This whole thing is weird. And we can tell she's trying to figure out what is going on.
Yeah, she thinks it might have something to do with the fact that it's like an old school. She's like, do you think it's weird that we're partying in this old school? Like, is that disrespectful? This was sacred. And I love, I could not have laughed any harder at Max's response. She's like, this is New York. Real estate is sacred. Yeah. MOTPD.
Max is really great. This is also where we get to like, if nobody eats my chicken, I'm going to effing kill myself.
Yes! I know, the chicken!
Making a whole chicken. It seems late. I don't know what time, like, I don't know what time
so
is it.
Late. But like, even if it's 8 o'clock, as someone who eats dinner late, like, I don't want to be cooking. I don't want to be cooking anything. I don't want to be cooking in the microwave, let alone a full chicken where there are like at least 50 people in this apartment.
Yeah, there's so many people for like what seems like also like a sit down dinner.
Yes, and it's one chicken.
The chicken is for her. The chicken is for the two of them.
Maybe.
Wait, hold on. I have to ask Marissa. Did you see any? Did you clock the actress who plays their friend? Lily is her name.
No,
Lizzie.
I did
because it took me a while, and I was like, "Where have I seen this face before?" She plays the DA on Inventing Anna.
Yes!
But her hair is so different because she's wearing glasses and her hair is white and she couldn't be like any more different than like a super like straight-laced lawyer.
I mean, they totally would eat a sandwich the exact same way. Like, yeah. I would see it. I could see it.
They have. I'm sure they have.
Yeah, good call. Yeah, so Lily, the friend Lily is also there and we also learned like she's friends with Maxine. There's a whole good group, a group of close friends in this sea of people. As well.
Yes.
Yeah, and then we go back to my favorite person, Mr. Mansplainer, who's now talking about John Updike, because who doesn't talk about John Updike at a party? I know I don't, but he does. And
you're missing out. You're missing out, Marissa. I'll just say
No, I refuse. And then she, you know, she asks her line, you got kids. And this time, like, she remembers that he had said, you have a son. And that kind of like, how creepy would that be? Like,
he's like, do we know each other? And she's like, nah, I have amnesia.
Yeah. Yes. And to your point, Marissa, he's so good at mansplaining that he's like, well, actually, amnesia would be if you're forgetting things. If you're remembering something, then that's not amnesia. And I was like, come on, focus. Focus. What are you doing here? And he doesn't even have a weird reaction. His reaction isn't, how did you know that? It's, have we met before? Like, he just, he can't even, that's the only logical explanation in his mind, which I guess in fairness to him is where most of us would go.
And the way that they're acting, I'm like, well, then that means that he must meet a lot of people and tell, like, you know what I mean? That's kind of what I took away from that is like, he meets people all the time and forgets about them. He has amnesia. He has people amnesia.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah. He meets people and he expects them to remember him.
Again, no bueno. Anyway, One of the things in the scene that I think on a rewatch was really interesting is she does go to the fish tank and she talks to the and says, you know, it's a myth that fish have no memory. And as we know later on in the series, fish become very important to the time of things.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I see. I smell what you're stepping in.
You see?
Ketchup and mustard.
Yeah.
Yes. That was great, Grace.
I love those. Such a great name. Like Max, again, with the killer, not just the killer names, but the killer line delivery from Greta Lee. It's awesome.
Yes.
Are they floating the right side up?
Yeah. The way she puts her hands, even, it's just like, yeah, it's so great. All these fun people. Like, I don't even care. The plot. The complicated plot is incidental. Like, I could have just watched a series about them at this party, like interacting with each other, because they're all so great.
It's a great party.
Give me the Sex and the City version, but it's like just with like queer, gender non-conforming people, I think, right?
Is this the after party season 2 already that we're getting? And Netflix and Apple TV are like, what if we were together?
One can only hope. One can only hope. So then we get this new character walks in the door. Her name's Ruth. You can tell that Nadia like really knows Ruth, mm-hmm. and she confesses to Ruth, "I don't know what I'm doing. I feel so profoundly empty."
Do you know when
menopause starts? Like, she's trying to like
a lot of questions for Ruth, who, to be fair, is like a therapist. So
rude, yes. Like a little bit age. Like, yes, I think to your point, Marissa, it's like there's clearly a closeness there. It's not like she's, you know, just like speaking out of turn to someone she may not know that well. But when she made the menopause comment, I was like, yeah, it feels a little ageist, but okay, I'll allow it.
Yeah, and they sit down for a conversation, and here's where we kind of learn that like Nadia and Ruth have a closer relationship than really pretty much anyone else at this party, because mm-hmm. Nadia is explaining to Ruth, you know, I'm having really intense deja vu, this is so new, maybe I'm okay, I don't know. Mm-hmm. And Ruth responds, you know, this was always going to be a tough birthday. And Nadia mm-hmm. responds, not everything is about mom. And so this is like, oh, okay, there's some
lore
stuff here.
We're getting a lore dump.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And she, like Ruth even goes to say, you know, your mom would have been proud you made it to 36.
Yeah.
Which is
so sad.
Yeah. Yeah. So like this, when I heard this the first time, I can understand why she was like asking about midlife crises or something like that at the start of the party, because this is, you know, a traumatic anniversary of sorts. It's not really an anniversary, but it's a milestone.
I remember my mom a few years ago, like, had her birthday on the age that like her mom had died, and like it's a very like, yeah, it's like a surreal thing to think that, like, you know, I never really met my grandma, and I was like, oh no, I don't want that. Like, I no, like, you know, it's really sad. And 36, boy, that's like really young. So that her mom did not make it to 36. It's tough. I love this relationship here. Like, there was, I think when I first saw it, I was like, oh, this must be her mom. Like, it was, you know, and it's like, nope, it's not. It's like her mom's friend. And it's a really cute, you know, because, you know, if she's turning 36 and her mom passed away when she's 36, like, she didn't have her mom for very long. So mm-hmm. Ruth kind of becomes a mother figure to her. And so I think this conversation is very sweet.
It is.
Yeah, it's very sweet, very deep, and Max's response to it is, I'm gonna make another chicken.
Yeah,
so she's like, gotta get up, gotta get out, gotta make another chicken,
gotta make a chicken.
But on her way to make a chicken, I loved this little pop culture time and moment. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
You're right.
Anyway,
you're right.
We've got a slideshow coming to us, and she's like, "I bought this at a Circuit City liquidation sale," and I was like, "Yes, you did, Max. Yes, you did."
it's such great little call-outs like this. Like, there was something early in the first episode too, and just Lizzie and Max have such a great relationship and shorthand. It's very entertaining and fun to see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we're going to go have a slideshow. And she declares to the entire room, this is a safe space. I am looking for a communal experience. So she's setting it up. Mm-hmm. And in the course of the slideshow, Nadia is having like super freaky flashbacks. And she remembers getting hit by a car, which mm-hmm. I thought was interesting.
Yes. Yeah. She's not she not only is she like in the very beginning of this current iteration, you know, we're gonna have to come up with some words that we're gonna use to represent things as we go forward, but in this current iteration of her reality, she, you know, she had that moment in the beginning where she's thinking about it, but as she goes on, you know, potentially she could forget about it, but now she's getting like a very visceral memory that doesn't feel like it's just clearly this is above deja vu, you know, deja vu you experience but you're only experiencing the moment. This is like a full-on memory.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep. And she's like, this does not make me feel good, so I'm gonna go back to this bathroom. And she thinks she's gonna puke, and she's there, and Lily's there, and she's like, hey Lily, I think I'm dead. And she's like, we're all dead. Like, Lily's girlfriend is actually the one who says it's Lizzie, right? Oh, sorry.
It is Lizzie.
Yeah, okay. Lizzie's girlfriend says, you know, we're all dead. And in the middle of this conversation, a man walks through the door, and we learn that this is John, Nadia's ex. And Lizzie does a great job, like, giving them space to have a conversation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You see like, a Fellini.
Yeah, see, right. Film once. Lizzie was like, sees a Fellini film once, like, yeah, to her 22-year-old. Yeah. Yeah. Not date. She's, you know, there was a discussion of whether they were dating or not in the first episode. I mean, in the first interaction. But yeah, she wisely knows that, but clearly based on Nadia's history with her ex, like, they're going to be in that bathroom for a little bit. So you need to get used to the wait.
Yeah.
Lizzie is also great here when she says, she's like, and if it's been a while, what did she say? She's like, doesn't she like, I'll give you more time? Like, I'll tell people to wait even longer.
Yep. Right. Yeah.
It's so nice. It's so sweet.
Super supportive.
Good friend. Yeah. Good friend.
Yep.
I mean, I will say, if you have to have a private conversation, it's probably a little bit selfish to have it in the bathroom. But I understand Nadia is going through a lot. So
she's having a moment. You
know, yes, she's having a big moment.
But outside of the bathroom, we see Nadia and John talking, and John's just like, I want to understand. And Nadia tells him kind of what's happening. And he's like, someone who's been hit by a car would be like all messed up, but you look beautiful. And I just was like, oh,
wait to miss the point.
Yeah. Yeah.
Still sweet, yeah. But, you know.
Yeah. And so I think John's kind of like trying to figure out what's going on here, and Nadia's making a bunch of metaphors, and you can tell that they used to date. It didn't end really on great terms. John's in a divorce. That divorce is not going well. And he even opens up and says the last few months have been an onslaught of misery. I'm like, oh, whoa. Okay, John, you've got some stuff going on. And you can see, like, Nadia asks about John's kid. And he's like, don't use my kid to get back together. And she says, don't use my kid to ease my guilt. So you can tell, like, this was a relationship. Upon first watch, I didn't know if this was her kid, you know, like, whose kid is this?
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I didn't even think of that. But that's totally, you know, totally a possibility.
Yeah. Yeah, they have an interesting relationship. But yeah, it's interesting.
But she goes to talk about her kid. She's like, I lost my cat.
Yes. Yeah. And John's like, you want to go find him? And she's like, really? Yeah, let's go. So we go outside, and she sees this person that she saw before that it seems familiar to her. And she's like, got to go across the street. And this time she goes out, and she almost gets hit by a car because John pulls her back.
What are you doing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, she's not good at crossing the street. I'm just gonna put that out there. Like,
but also he says, he's like, it's like, well, what do you mean? Like, I thought the oatmeal was just a line for us to go home together. It's like, John, come on, John.
Right?
You're being like Marissa's favorite guy.
So far, the men in this series are not up to caliber, ladies.
Come on, we actually went to go find a cat, a real cat.
Yeah. Why? In what world is that a euphemism? I don't know. Anyway.
Well, and we also learned that, like, John wouldn't know about the birthday party. Like, Nadia's not happy about this whole situation. She's like, I want to go see the cat because I think I see the cat. I think I see oatmeal across the street. And why would you hold me back? And he's like, John's like, I wouldn't have known about your birthday if Maxine didn't invite me. And she's like, whatever, just leave me alone. And then
I love it. She's like, who gets upset about not being invited to a birthday party? Like, she casts dig at every single time that she can. She has to like cut him down a little bit. Which clearly, you know, the way that they're both acting, this is a very common, or it was very common to their relationship, seemingly.
Yeah, for sure.
Yep. So then, she crosses the street. And she's like, ooh, cars. Like, I injured. That was
ooh. Ooh, cars. She says that now. Wait till
I... Yeah.
Yeah. She gets to the park. She sees oatmeal. She picks up oatmeal, takes oatmeal to by the water and is like asking oatmeal, did we do it? Did we, like, basically, did we not die? Were we able to stay alive today? And when she looks back in her lab, oatmeal is gone.
This is the weirdest part for me of this. Like, I didn't remember this little, like, I think this little aspect is interesting to me. I think I'm probably the one out of the three of us who remembers the least about what happens. And I was like, what the, I don't remember like being like that, that the cat goes missing. So what's up with that? And then she falls into water, but yeah.
And dies. Know. She falls into the water and dies. I didn't think she was going to the first time I watched this.
I had a little bit more of a problem with this one than I did with the brittle bones question mark of the taxi. Like, I think the taxi thing, I was like, okay.
She drowns very quickly. She's not how to swim.
Like, I wonder if she hit her head.
You don't even, okay. Yeah. That's what I was going to say. Like, did she hit her head on the way down? You know, I didn't need to see that. Please. We see enough death. I don't need to, like, you know, see all the nitty gritty, gross details, but,
I think it's to the show's advantage to not, like, for the deaths to, like, I made fun of them. That's like we'll get to the one again. We'll get to the one that I have the biggest problem with.
Right.
But it's like very, like, you do see her dead. Like, we do like zoom in on her being dead, but it's also not like grotesque and graphic, you know?
Right. Which I think to your point is wise by the show.
Because it's pretty light, despite being like, I think the darkness of the show comes from like the stuff that they're peppering in here of like, your mom died at the same age that you are now, you know, you seem to have this like bad breakup, you know, like there's enough there that like, I think the show doesn't actually need to be like, her hitting her head, you know?
Yeah.
And then lo and behold, we're back in the bathroom. This time she's puking up water. So this was interesting that we had like an element continue into the next instance of her of her life. And so she's like, where did oatmeal go? We hear the song. She goes out to be greeted by Max with her happy birthday baby. And this is she says one of the lines that I know I have thought at least in my life. She says, the universe is trying to F with me and I refuse to engage.
Good luck.
This is where we get big, like, there's something in the cigarette, and you're like, this is your first thought that, like, oh, this is happening because I'm doing a drug that I've never done before.
You know, like, it makes sense, right? Like, of all the things that we have seen her do in all her time, like, it makes sense that she would say that she would think, okay, this isn't actually happening, this is just me imagining it happening, so what would have led me down this path to think that this was happening? She's using all the clues that she's been given so far and trying to come up with a hypothesis. It's very scientific of her.
Yes, she's like, nothing has effed me up like this before. And Maxine says to her, stop being a victim, you're a cockroach. And she says, I'm not a cockroach.
I do love the pronunciation of cockroach. That happens many, many times.
Yes, I think even like after this aired, there was like she was asked like, "Why do you say cockroach?" And she's like, "Do you not say it that way?"
Cockroach.
I have no comment about that one. I don't really get it.
I love it.
Maxine explains to her, she's like, you never die. And Nadia's like, I'm dying constantly.
Which it, whether it's in context or out of context, is just like an objectively funny line. But obviously to get this, we've seen her die a couple of times and it's just like, seriously, you really are.
Yep. Yeah, for sure. And then she goes outside and she sees Mr. Mansplainer. He's on the phone. He's having a conversation. We learn a little bit more, like he's having this conversation with someone, like asking about kids, stuff like that. So we're getting a little bit more into, I guess he's not just one-dimensional mansplainer man, but we're getting to know a little bit more about him. And she starts to go down the stairs and she kind of saves her because she was going to fall. And he says, you know, be careful going down the stairs, which is, as we will find out, fantastic foreshadowing.
Yeah, it's funny in retrospect to look on that moment now, for sure.
And then she goes outside and she sees the guy again. And I think that's kind of it for us. Episode one.
Yeah, I was and on this watch, I was a little bit surprised, but I think pleasantly surprised ultimately that it doesn't end with her dying again.
Yeah.
It's just like a moment of like you kind of don't know, like even if you're about to go into episode two right away, you don't know like, OK, what's the episode structure going to be like? Will there be a time jump? Like, what are we getting into? I think it's clever to leave you wanting more in that sense.
I was surprised. We'll get into episode two. I thought in my memory of the show that episode two does a lot of what episode one does. Like that's my, is it like it starts off, which there is a lot of the same stuff happening to an extent. But yeah, I was kind of surprised in the way that like episode one wasn't exactly what I remembered it being in terms mm-hmm. of like setting up the show. I feel like actually like it's actually kind of perfect that we were choosing to do episode one and two at the same time, because I think yeah. collectively as a unit, they actually do a good job of setting up what the show will be.
Work really well. Yeah, I yep. agree. I hear a cat scratching at my door. I think it might be oatmeal. We're going to take a quick commercial break here. We're from our sponsors and we'll be right back. And we're back. That was episode one. I would love to hear what happens in episode two. If only there were someone that could help me with that.
Could it be me?
Marissa, thank God you're here. My sweet birthday baby.
Well, I'm happy to walk you through episode two. So we find out that Nadia wakes up. That's like, that's new. That's something we haven't seen her do before. Mm-hmm. So she made it through the night. She's woken up. She's still thinking about oatmeal. And she says, you know, I'm alive. Like, this is exciting for her as much as it is for us. Mm-hmm. And we also see that she has kept the joint from the party the night before. So mm-hmm. she's still going on her quest.
Ariel, in the preview pod, talked about how cool she looks smoking a cigarette. Is this the coolest she looks smoking the cigarette? The next morning when she's like in her house, she's like kicking the door shut with her leg because she's got a cigarette in her
mouth. Is this when she's like laying in bed still and she uses her retractable lighter like while
oh maybe I was thinking like when she's on the phone with Max later maybe.
Oh well, either the whole either thing, way fire around. Hazard in bed, I think that's a big no-no as far yeah. as I'm concerned. But she, I mean, the thing looks so natural in her hand. I cannot say enough about the cigarette acting, if you will. Like, it's just like, I'm trying to move my hand and I'm not doing it right because there's no cigarette there and I don't even smoke. But like, you know, in order to do a proper Natasha Lyonne, like the way she gesticulates, it's like she was born with a cigarette in her hand. I'm sorry. That's a horrible image. But everything she does is cool, but particularly the smoking thing. She's too cool for school.
I mean,
we do not recommend or endorse you smoking.
But, yes, no, yeah. This comes with a certain general warning.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Then we see Nadia gets a meeting notice on her phone and she's like, oh, crap, I got to go to work. So she, before she goes to work, she calls Max. She's like, hey, how's it going? And Max is like, do you know about Dolores Huerta? And like, goes into this whole thing about Dolores. And she's like, what? Max is now asking these questions, right? Like, she's like, what am I doing with my life? Dolores Huerta has been married, like, and divorced twice by my age. And I just think this shows a little bit of the friendship between the two of them, because Nadia replies, if it's any consolation, I promise you, you'll be divorced one day.
Thanks.
So sweet. Like, what a friend to say that and like genuinely mean it in only the good ways that you can say something like that.
That's so sweet.
Yeah. Nadia just wants to know though, where did you get the Israeli joint from? And Max tells her where she got it from, but she wants to know why, what's going on. And she's like concerned about Nadia at this point. And she says, your friends can only help you if you let them, as I've said before, which I think is an important thing to take away for Nadia's character.
Yeah.
That's sweet. Yeah. She's giving what's her name? No, I'm not going to remember it. But from Inventing Anna, there's like the walking fortune cookie character. Who's saying
Casey?
I believe it's Casey. Yeah, Laverne Cox's character.
Yes.
This is right out of her playbook, and it's just like, I told you about this thing that's actually very healthy and good for your mental health, and I'm reminding you again, like as a good friend would.
Again, it's like setting up a lot of like where Nadia was. Like, obviously, we are going to be on this, like, adventure with her, like, as she's going through this very weird time in her life. But, you know, we have to start somewhere. And so it's good seeding of sort of who Nadia is before all this other stuff starts happening to her. Yeah. And where they'll be reset to, right? Like, this is always where she'll be reset to in terms of her friendship with Maxine, right? So.
Yes.
Yep. Well, like any good person, before going to work, she's got to go get her coffee. So she goes out the door, heads back to the bodega after talking to Max, and she asks Ferran about how his friend was doing from last night. And
do we all notice who the guy is who's rambling on at the checkout?
I did not.
That's
I did recognize him. Yeah, the guy from Home Alone, right?
It's
the older
one
brother.
And only Buzz from Home Alone.
No way.
Buzz, your girlfriend.
This has to be in the Home Alone universe because the second movie took place in New York. Like,
that's
hello.
Right.
Clearly, no, don't bring living. The second one in.
That's
don't
Buzz.
Bring
the
hey,
one
it's my hometown. I will absolutely bring it out. I'm not talking about the third one. I'm talking about the second one. He clearly is staying at that uncle's brownstone that is in the second movie. That's all I will say.
In many ways, you could say that Nadia is lost in New York.
Stop. In so many ways. In so many ways.
Yeah, that's so Buzz McAllister right there. So yeah.
Good pickup.
Oh, she lost her mom too. I can't. Oh.
You know what I would love for Catherine O'Hare cameo.
Oh, that would
just
be great.
Put that in the world.
Well, yeah. She's like still looking for Kevin. She's lost in like her own like Russian doll loop of like
Kevin. Kevin.
Yeah. You look great.
And instead of like Harry Nielsen, it's like polka music every morning. It's like
John Candy's polka music.
So good. Like Max comes out with her harmonica. She's like playing it for the friend. Anyway.
Yeah. Yes. So we find out though, it was actually a quiet night at the bodega, and like Nadia's like super confused about this whole situation. And the guy standing there, Buzz from Home Alone, is not again, Mr. Not treating people and customer service very nice.
Kind of a jerk. Yeah.
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 He's actually wants to have a conversation with the customer. It's actually like, don't you see I'm standing here? It's like, you're not doing
anything.
It's like
the opposite spectrum. It's like the opposite spectrum of like rudeness. It's like you're like thinking that your connection or whatever conversation is more important, where it's actually just like he's trying to be nice to you.
Yeah.
Yep. So she continues on her way to work. She gets she texts John and says, hey, did you smoke any of the joints from the party last night? Inquiring minds want to know. Mm-hmm. And he's like, he doesn't respond yet. But she sends it and she's at her office. And this scene was semi-relatable for me in my life because this is a situation where she works for a video game company. So she's the only woman in the room. And they start the meeting off by saying how great all of the men are. But there's a bug in Nadia's code. And Nadia's like, yeah, okay, I'll just fix it. It's okay.
It's actually Bill's code.
Yes.
That's wrong. Yeah, she's like, I'll fix it. But it actually is like, well, I don't know if Bill's the right name, but it's actually his bug.
Yeah. And here, I didn't know if it was that thing of like she is deflecting because she doesn't want to get blamed and she's actually just fixing her code, or if it is actually his code. Like I genuinely wasn't sure what was going on.
I feel like she'd take ownership of her code. Like I feel like she's so like upfront that like if it was her code, like she would just be like, yeah, like the next thing she does, she's just like, I gotta go. It's my drug dealer.
That's
hiding
correct.
Stuff
the brutal,
specifically from
right,
her work.
The brutal honesty. Yeah. I was gonna say, like, Marissa clearly is familiar with the situation, especially this specific part of like, oh, it's my drug dealer. I gotta go.
I gotta go.
That was
for the record. I am not a fraudster, nor am I a drug. Do I frequent drug dealer places?
Right. But you got to take the call anyway.
Because specifically, I said drug dealer places. So right, doesn't tell you.
You're a natural.
Anywho, you can just kind of tell that like stuff in the office is awkward, and she does get a phone call and she does say, that's my drug dealer, I gotta take this. She ends up going to like a restaurant, which is a front for this drug dealer, and talks to War Dog, I believe his name. Not
the War Dog.
It's
War Dog.
Home Alone, Survivor, it's all coming into play here.
Wow.
The Russian doll, the Russian doll effect of pop culture, just everywhere.
So she's talking to War Dog, and War Dog's like, "Hey, I started this secret club, and it's got a password. Don't worry, I'll tell you." Jaworski's Dune. And just like, nerd alert, nerd alert.
Yeah.
But she, in this conversation, you know, he tells her it's only cocaine that is in there. And she's like, listen, who loves drugs more than me? It is not cocaine. I have had cocaine enough to know what cocaine does to me, but I'm having some kind of meltdown that I have never had before.
This little interaction where she's like, who loves drugs more than me? He's like, nobody. You,
like, you.
He's like, who loves orgies more than you? And he's like, nobody.
He's
me.
Like, nobody.
Like,
it's ridiculous. So honest.
It's so ridiculous. This scene. This war dog guy. I don't know.
He's great. He's a great, he seems like a very fun war dog if he's a war dog.
Mm-hmm.
And in the course of the conversation, she gets another phone call and we see that John's on the other line. And John, we find out that John went to the party, but Nadia wasn't there. So this was after she rushed out with the joint.
She leaves very quickly in this timeline that she lives, right?
So yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. Yeah, and she, like, because she did not have the bathroom conversation this time around, I think she opens up to John and says, like, listen, I'm scared. I'm questioning my own sanity and I think I might be dead. Like, I think I might be a ghost.
Yeah.
Yeah.
John's response is not that great. He's like, how, what does this have to do with me? What do you want me to do? And she's like, maybe help me.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe. And we learn a little bit more about the relationship because John says every time you make a rescue plan, it makes you want to leave.
I mean, so I do think this is very relatable as well. And, you know, we have to, like, remind ourselves, I think, a little bit that, like, she will continually keep getting more information than anybody else has, which she becomes very mm-hmm. adept at, like, using, mm-hmm. Like, to, like, cut through, like, a conversation, right? To be like, you know, even when she's talking with Maxine later about, like, you know, it has ketamine in it. This is ketamine. It's like, how would you even know? And she's like, saying, yeah, where you bought it from War Dogs. How do you know War Dog is my dealer? You know, she will continually have more information. And again, that piece about, like, where Maxine is going to reset every time, is true for John too, that, like, John is resetting to, like, but basically where he is before the party in any timeline where they do not talk at the party, right? Like,
right,
there is forward momentum when they do chat and talk about their lives and they, like, seem to, you know, kind of move, you know, explain to each other in some ways and also, like, you know, hey, don't use your kid to, like, guilt trip me and all of that stuff. But you have to imagine this in this one, like, she is, like, a loop ahead, you know, like, of where he is, right? So it's kind of understandable that, like, to her, like, she dipped out on her own party, and then, which, you know, he probably should be like, yeah, probably something is wrong and I might want to help you. But I also think this, like, rescue plans make you leave, I think, is really interesting mm-hmm. in terms of who Nadia is, in terms of, like, sometimes when there's, like, it's almost easier when you can blame things not going well and everybody else. And when there is actually, like, a plan that you just have to follow the plan, when you don't follow the plan, it's like, oh, that's me. Like, I messed up. Mm. Whereas, like, sometimes it feels better to just be like, well, no, it's the world that sucks. You know, that's the reason I'm struggling, because the world sucks. We're like, so I think this line is just, like, super interesting. Yeah. And then she dies.
Well, yeah, she's so engrossed in the conversation. She falls through the, like, base cellar door thing.
Yeah, cellar door.
Yeah. Listen, my mother used to warn me. So when I was a kid, I loved walking on these things because there was just, like, this is so sick. There's just, like, this feeling of, like, I don't know, like, daring that came with it. Like, my mom was telling me it was a bad idea and I was like, no, I have agency over my life. And I was like, I'm gonna step on this thing. And then there were a couple of times where, like, it would give ever so slightly, like 9 times out of 10, you step on it and you feel nothing. But every once in a while you step on it and it, like, ever so slightly opens and, like, kind of gives way a little bit. And there are, like, stories. There are countless stories of people, like, falling into these things. So it's like, when this happened to her, I was like, oh, that's bad. I mean, in her case, it was open. So that's totally on her that she didn't see it. She wasn't paying attention. But, they do be scary sometimes.
This one made me so sad because she had made it so far.
Yeah.
And she died.
Yeah. She, okay. So yeah, we had learned, Marissa, you made this point earlier a little bit, but, like, a couple of things we have now learned is these things really did happen. Like, the fact that she coughs up the water in the first episode tells us she was physically there. This isn't mm-hmm. something she imagined. She was physically in the water. And here we see that she was able to have a night where she slept and woke up and she continued to live. So there doesn't seem to be any rhyme or reason for when the death occurs, just that it will eventually inevitably occur.
Yeah. Yeah. And they will occur because we're heading into some times where it's gonna happen a lot.
It's very video gamey, right? We're like, yeah, there's the car, but if you can like figure out how to like not get hit by the car, then like, you know, that, but then and now she, you know, she does fall victim to the same thing many, many times.
But that's a great point, Grace, because she works for a video game company. So if she's trying to work something out in her life or going through this existential crisis, it's interesting that it would be set in like a save point type of environment.
Right.
Yes. Yeah. No, it does make sense.
So after falling through the door, guess where we are? We're back in the bathroom. She's looking at her finger this time, though, because earlier she had like a paper cut and this time the cut was healed. So that was interesting. We hear the song. She goes out the door. And this time she's like walking and staring at people like, this is weird. I can't be here. She grabs her coat. She heads out the door. She goes back to the club, gives the fancy password. Jardowski's Dune.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then and she's like asking Wardog and his scientist Breaking Bad-esque friend, like, hey, what is in this joint? Like, you have to tell me what's in the joint.
It's like
Who has it's just cocaine more than me again?
And he's like, no, it's ketamine. I love that we get the whole scene of him like, it's just cocaine. And then like we get this other whole scene where he's like, it's cocaine. The guy's like, no, it's not, it's ketamine.
It's like such a casual conversation about something so serious.
It's so funny.
And she says, I keep dying every single day. Does it hurt? You seem fine.
You seem fine. Does it hurt? So insensitive.
And then this one, is there a history of mental illness in your family? And that is like goes off like, no.
Yeah,
it's not me.
Very strong reaction. Like, it not only is it not me, it cannot be me. Like, this is not gonna happen to me. So something has happened that she's probably dealing with at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes outside and she sees Ferran from the bodega with his friend, and she's like, hey, I remember that, but she's so fixated on this that she falls through the door again.
This is brutal. And I did wonder, like, is Ferrand, and this is something like going forward we can kind of monitor, because we don't really come back to this in this episode, I don't believe, but like it seems like the morning after the party that she experienced, Ferrand was either lying about the friend coming in, or the fact that she didn't show up to the deli had some effect on the guy who we later learned his name is Alan, the guy coming in to the bodega. Like, I wasn't quite sure, and I couldn't, searching my memory, I am happy that I don't remember, but it's just something for us to monitor as we move forward.
Yeah, I agree.
Yep. And so, boom, back in the bathroom, she goes out the door. She's like, Maxine's like, hey, happy birthday. Here's a joint. She's like, no, I don't want anything on this.
No,
offer me that. Yeah, don't offer me that. And she's out the door and she falls down the stairs. And I have to say, the next couple of deaths are some of my favorite. I have never laughed so hard at people falling down the stairs as I have watching this TV show.
She keeps breaking her neck, falling down. How? How?
Thinking of you looking at the grave. This is bogus. This doesn't even make sense.
I love though that Grace, this is the thing, like, not the repeated death and waking up again. Like, you're not questioning that. It's the
fine. But if you're gonna die, she's gotta die to reset it every time. And she just I think it's that she doesn't. Again, we don't want it to be too like graphic, like, because I actually think that like falling in the hole is better, because like anything could have happened in the hole, you know. But I keep seeing her fall down the stairs and they're like, oh, broken neck, you know.
Falling in the hole is better, Grace, to March 2022.
I don't think that's
I will agree with Marissa that I laughed so hard in this, like, little, they do such a good job of like building this ridiculous momentum of her continually falling down the stairs. And again, it's the Natasha Lyonne of it all. Like, no, ordinarily I do not fall when somebody falls down the stairs, but like the context of this is just so well executed and and clearly, like, you know, done for laughs. Like, it's not, you know, we're not laughing at a serious situation here.
The best one is he comes out, like, I gotta figure out how to get down these stairs. Yeah, watch out.
But she says it like it's like a thing on her to-do list. She's like, I gotta figure out how to get down the stairs. Well, and before that we get like really great things like, is this some sort of sick fantasy? Like, and Maxine's asking, should I get bangs? Which is an existential question for many, many people. And
Maxine asking all the hard-hitting questions. Like, does your 22-year-old lover know what 9/11 is? Should I get bangs? Like, these are all the important questions that she's asking.
This is like the game on Michael Douglas.
Yes.
Just runs out. It's so good.
It's so good. It's seriously like the best montage of falling down the stairs I think there ever has been.
Mm-hmm. I do think it's funny. I do think it's great.
After the last one, we find ourselves back in the bathroom, and this time Nadia's like a little upset. She's like, this is getting ridiculous. She goes over and she asks Maxine, why would you give me a joint without knowing what's in it?
Great question.
She's going right to the 10 of, like, to your point, Grace, of like, she is coming in with all the previous knowledge, right? She's like learning and adapting as she goes, and here she's immediately at the accusatory phase after no previous. It's like, why would you give me this joint? it's so unfair.
I don't remember if we know this or not, but like how much she's at the party beforehand. And so like whether there are drugs being like, she clearly those don't really matter. And I don't think it really matters to me. Like, this is the point in the story where we're at. And she's going to smoke, like in the original thing, she does smoke this cocaine/ketamine fueled laced joint, you know? So like, whatever. But yeah, just coming in and just being like out of the bathroom, being like, why'd you give me this? I have not given you this. Yeah.
I did all of this because I love you.
Yeah, and this turns into like kind of a confrontation between the two of them, though, right? Like, she's like, what is going on? You think I'm a cockroach, but you're a cockroach. And I'm sure Max is like, what are you talking about?
Because I think you mispronounced cockroach.
Cockroach. Thank you. Thank you, Grace. Thank you.
I just don't want the listeners to get, you know yes. Get nitpicky about pronunciations and names and things. So
They're going back and forth. And basically, like, Maxine is calling Nadia a little crazy, and I am of the mind that crazy is not a good word to be calling people in general, but it definitely hits a nerve here with Nadia.
Yeah, I think it's obvious in this moment that it's hit a nerve, and there's potentially a reason why it would hit a nerve. But it's, you know, in fairness to, like, obviously, this is a thing that happens with friends, right? Like, sometimes you cross the lines, you say things because you have knowledge, you have like really intimate knowledge about your friend, and sometimes you use it against them. But in fairness to Max, she came out of that bathroom at a 12, and Max is like, what is the problem? Like, I don't even understand what you're talking about. I'm making you chicken.
Okay, uh-oh. But this is like the best. I loved this whole chicken picking up the chicken scene where she picks up the chicken, she looks Max like dead in the eyes, and is just like,
don't you dare.
She drops it.
Oh god.
You know what I love? I love that this is not like, they very easily could have like had the chicken get dropped and then Nadia leaves and then dies, and they don't.
Yeah.
Like, this is not the one where she has like the fight with Maxine, like, you know, is actually the one where like she ends up like, well, I'm just safer to just hang out here, and I'm just gonna hang out at this party. I really like that like choice to
And she does, and she does with an attitude of kind of like, F this. Like, she's she does drugs, she's, you know, going around and kind of like not really attached to reality. The camera work in this section is kind of trying to tell us that she's like not grounded in any way, shape, or form. I said this was like a great montage of Nadia to kind of get it from her perspective, and she ends up falling asleep.
And I love that when she goes to bed, it's very dangerous, but it's fine.
Danger! Like, I'm surprised there wasn't one iteration of like her burning herself alive. God. Not that I want to see that, for the record. But I do love, like, a little bit to the point I made earlier of, like, Nadia's reactions and Nadia's you know, ways of dealing with this insane situation that you obviously cannot prepare for, have any like emotional context for, and cannot explain to anyone. All of her reactions being so realistic, and at least feeling to me personally, in a lot of cases, as how I would react. And like here, she's kind of like, it's that very, in this trope of these things are repeating, Groundhog Day, whatever you want to call it, there inevitably is a point where the person for a while is like, F it. Like, I'm just going to party. Like, there's yeah. no point. None of this matters. This like, I'm just like, going to get as wasted as possible.
When, yep. Where Bill Murray, like, learns all of the Jeopardy. He's just like,
yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
This is it. So she wakes up again at Max's this time, and she's just like, effing Mondays, because this apparently was like Sunday.
Right. It's a Sunday night party, to be clear.
Yeah.
Like, it was like wild.
With ketamine laced joints and chicken. I mean,
to be fair,
on.
They did only think it was cocaine
laced. Yeah. Right. That's fair. That's fair. That's fair.
Right. Chicken on a Sunday sounds like more wholesome.
Sunday
like,
night.
Chicken on a Saturday, like, that's too much. But chicken on a Sunday, like, I can get behind that.
Yeah. And Lizzie wakes up, and Lizzie's in a, you know, precarious
pile.
Like, yeah, she had fun last night.
A human pile. Yeah. I love how happy she is about it.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
She's so proud of herself. Like, wow, look at me. Like, did I do that? Like, Urkel, but better.
The look she gives when the guy behind her stands up and walks away.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Yeah. She's like, all right. All right. And Nadia asks for Lizzie's help here. It's like, hey, can you help me with something?
It's so funny.
And that something turns out to be the fire escape, because we know she cannot go down these stairs. These stairs are not the place for her anymore.
What's wrong with the stairs? It's a long story involving multiple deaths, you know? I don't know.
And Lizzie being like such a great friend is like, got you. Like, MBD, like, it's all good. Let's go down this precarious fire escape.
Well, she does say it. She's like, yeah, this is much safer.
Yeah, this you know? Is much safer. Yeah. I will say, as somebody who grew up with a fire escape, and that, you know, I know that that part of it specifically is not like, you know, specific to New York, but it is much harder to get the ladder down than they always make it seem on movies and TV shows. I just want to say that for the
no,
record.
Only New York has fire escapes.
Thank you for clarifying.
New York is the only place where fires occur.
Yeah, that's right.
There aren't even firefighters in other cities.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, Chicago fire makes no sense.
It's true. Mm-hmm. I mean, mm-hmm. at least that's maybe why that's why there is Chicago fire, because we don't have fire escapes to
right.
escape
so
the fire.
What are we gonna do? Every episode is what do we do?
How do we get out of the building?
I wish there was escape. Yeah. So she successfully gets down the fire escape with the help of Lizzie. Her phone rings or gives a little reminder. She's like, I'm not dealing with work today. This is like, what is the point?
What a dream.
If anybody, right, to anybody who doesn't want to deal with work on a Monday morning, like,
just get stuck
Nadia
in a time loop.
The best excuse, like, F that. I'm not even going to bother touching that. Like, who would want to go to, who would bother going to work when you knew that you were just going to wake up on Sunday again?
A real, like, I can deal with that tomorrow.
Yeah.
Literally situation.
Yeah. 100%. If I'm still alive tomorrow, I'll deal with it.
So she's on her way to Ruth's. And when we get to Ruth's, you can see that Ruth is a therapist. She's practicing EMDR with her patient, which is a therapy that can help a lot with trauma. So we know that Ruth is like, knows how to talk about trauma. She understands trauma. Nadia walks in and grabs chicken out of the fridge, which I thought was interesting. And Ruth offers her tea. And she says, no, I don't want any of your fancy water.
Water. Yeah. Very Ted Lasso here.
Yes. Mm. Yes. Yes. And Nadia sits Ruth down and is like, okay, what I am going to tell you is pretty heavy. It's kind of crazy. And she's like, no, we don't use that word in this house, especially. And, she, you know, Nadia's asking Ruth about her mother's diagnosis. And I think this is really important line just in general. But Ruth says, do not confuse your mother with her damage.
So good writing, such good, it's yeah. so good,
incredible, like delivered with such warmth. Also, like the, I guess a little bit right, like Nadia's voice, Natasha Lyonne's voice is famously raspy, but her Ruth's voice also is a little bit of that. So I think it's so warm, it's so genuine
but,
and
but also like
a lot of like
stern, you know, mm-hmm. also like, you know, like do not confuse your mother with her damage. Like it's like you know, like Ruth is in some ways her mom, you know,
yeah.
is a, at least a motherly figure, you know. This is like the thing of like, hey, come on.
Right. And we know that her mother died when she was 35. So regardless of how young her mother was when she had Nadia, Nadia lost her mom young, relatively. So, yeah.
Yep. And Nadia just comes out and says it last night. I died. And Ruth is like, okay. you know, like God, she's
poor
like,
Nadia. I just feel for her.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, Ruth says, you know, remember when you were a teenager?
Yeah,
we had some difficult times, and if things got really scary, you would say. And Nadia says, "Record player, Ruth, record player." So this
without,
is like
without
their code word.
A beat. Without skipping a beat, she's like, record player.
Without skipping a beat, as a good record player would do.
Yes, nice. Don't be skipping beats. Thank you, Grace.
No problem.
Yes, no, don't do that.
And Ruth is like, "Are you sure? Should I call my guy at Bellevue?" So obviously this was like their code word for like, if you need real heavy duty psychiatric help, this is what you say to me. Yeah. And
not to be used lightly, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah. And so
she's like, you will not be alone. And immediately we cut to her being like, okay, so my niece can't handle the ambulance. I'm going to take a cab. You will literally be, I guess you're literally not alone because there are two other people, but like metaphorically you are alone.
And yes. I have never felt older because I was like having a little bit of like knee pain at the time I was watching this. And I was like, me too, Ruth. Me too, protect yourself.
I think it's like Ruth is her like a motherly figure and also not quite her mom. You know? It's a good little reminder here. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, all right, I'm going to send you in the ambulance by yourself.
Okay, I'm watching you from back here.
So funny.
Oh, so continuing the tradition of men who suck on this show.
100%, Grace. 100%. So we're in the ambulance and these. People, these men are like, hey,
these men
are like, hey, take off your jewelry. Is this, can you remember the date? Or what would you do if you found a letter on the ground? All of these questions, like questions that you need to ask, but the way that they're asking them, it's like super condescending. And then you hear the driver guy, and he's like, hey, I hear we got a redhead on board. Like, what the F? Not professional behavior in any way, shape, or form.
Out of control. Out of
control.
Not
like
listen,
it.
New York might have firefighting under control. Yeah. They do not have the ambulance drivers under control. Paramedics.
The toxic masculinity is rampant across many industries.
Also, shout out to any New York paramedic who's listening. We love you. And
we do. Thank
you for all your service. Thank you for all your service.
Well, at least like maybe just like New York in TV.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
New York. They definitely got the accent down.
Yeah.
I love that. Being like a bunch of mama's boys are not going to decide if I'm crazy,
which is great. Which Nadia, 100%. This is not what's going to happen. And so she starts to get out of the ambulance, and at the time they're like, "Oh, we're going to sedate you because this is what we're going to do." So there's like a physical like struggle, and at the same time, there's a crash. Boom.
I'm not really sure why she has to go on the ambulance to go to whoever she needs to go see. I feel like, again, Ruth, I don't know, maybe not the best judgment call, but that's fine, whatever.
She kind of like took, I mean, I guess we don't know what kind of conversation they had when they were like, when you say these words, the following will take place, but they could have just driven over. Like, they could have taken, they could have gotten in a cab together and, but. You know, it's anyway. Fine. Maybe she was worried about what Nadia might do to herself or others. So, you know, that's the protocol.
Apparently, interesting to me, I think this is the first time where like she dies. Well, there's other people involved when she dies, right?
Yeah.
Too, as well. So
is this a believable death, Grace? Is this one?
Yeah.
Like, if you're going to rank
you get T-bones? Yes, absolutely. Yeah. I think this is actually perhaps.
This is high. This is your number one.
Number one death. They're all fighting.
That's what we need to do. We need to be ranking the deaths.
Okay.
Like, luckily, we had many multiples of the cellar, so we can like kind of put those.
Okay.
Into,
my
like,
next, I'll loop all the stairs except for the one where she does the like excuse like I'm doing them, and then she gets flipped over. That's a different one. But the rest of them, I will make sure they're absolutely ranked by next.
Yes.
Next,
okay.
Tomorrow.
Okay. Cool. We can rank them as we go. Yeah. I think this will be fun.
But well, this is high. They're fighting over the sedative in the back, and then they're all like, they're not wearing seatbelt, and then they hit a cart. Yeah, that's
I mean, so many things could happen before she, like, so many things could, she could be impaled. There's a lot. Yeah. There's a lot of things that happen.
Yeah, no, of course. And ostensibly, this might be like a death that occurred. Like, she isn't the only one that dies here. Like, you know, they could have, if the other two are, you know, they ostensibly they fly, right? Like, they're not seatbelted in. So, like, there's a potential for them to go flying and hit themselves very hard within the ambulance. I don't know. I mean,
if the timeline continues, there's definitely more than one casualty, I believe.
Right.
Okay, so because she died, she finds herself back in the bathroom, and she says in the mirror, I think this is also really important, and she kisses her necklace here, which is something she didn't want to take off in the ambulance before, and she says, nobody locks us up. This is
She said it's her mom's, right? It was her mom's necklace, she says?
Yeah.
So clearly, you know, so this is, again, like another fact we're getting about the mom, and between her conversation with Ruth and don't call me crazy, like we're getting this painted picture of like what life might have been like with her mom. And obviously her mom was at some point, you know, institutionalized in some way.
Yep. But she's this time she's like, okay, let's just do the party. Let's go have the party. She walks out. She's like, this is the greatest party ever. And Maxine is like, thank God I started cooking on Thursday.
Probably the most relatable thing that Maxine will say.
Hilarious.
To which Nadia's response, I think, is if you're going this, I cannot think of Russian Doll without thinking of this line. Yeah. And this Twitter account, there is a Twitter account that tweets every Thursday because Nadia says, Thursday, what a concept.
I love it.
And she's like, it's never going to be Thursday again. So you can see the party like continuing. But then the episode ends like zero or focused in on these flowers, and the flowers are dying. And I don't know about you, but I remember I was taken back to E.T. And like when E.T. has some like flower death situations happening.
Didn't he like phone home at one point? Isn't that
he did? Yeah,
the big thing.
Yeah. Okay. He did. Yeah. But
and he did.
He smoked. He did ketamine.
He did. Maybe this is like a retelling of E.T.
Whoa,
God, we're ruining E.T.
Chief. No, but that's
ruining E.T. Great.
Yeah, but this is like. This is pretty harrowing to watch because to your point, Marissa, like the camera really lingers. This is the final image of the episode. This is clearly intentional and important, and we need to notice this, and we need to feel like it is reality is being affected in some way that we have yet to understand.
Yes. So I think it's just like another this is weird marker for us. We've got like the strange portal door, we've got of course the dying and realiving part of it, but there's something sci-fi, something supernaturally about this story. We don't know what it is yet, but pay attention to the flowers.
Also credit to the show of like, you know, it's a binge-worthy show, you know, it all dropped at once, but like they got me on the decaying flowers. I'm like, I want to watch the next episode. We stopped down because we're going to podcast, but I'm like, but I want to remember like, what happened with the flowers.
But what about more?
And it's that's really good that like if you explain that to somebody, like you will not believe the cliffhanger in episode 2 of Russian Doll.
And have I got the cliffhanger for you? What about
this cliffhanger
flowers?
Has everything.
Yes, and very realistic acting from those flowers, like super dead looking. Like I've never
I think
seen
these
were flower.
Played by Chris Pratt. I think.
Yeah. So you're gonna say Scarlett
Johansson? There's a few names you can throw around for this.
You could
bit
do it all. But yeah, so that's the end of the episode. I do just want to quickly call out like one of the great effective things about every time she wakes up is that for me is like the music starts and then there's like the incessant knocking at the door. So there is no time for her to like gather her thoughts. She's just like immediately being attacked by the knock, 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 knock on the door. And it's such a visceral reaction. Like knocking on the door gets to anyone, will get on anyone's nerves. But like to just have woken up from death and then now like the knocking on the door, it's like, oh!
Yeah, it's really
good. It's just another layer.
She's got to get up. She's got to get out.
Got to get out of that bathroom.
Yeah. Yeah. That was fun.
That's episodes 1 and 2. What a time.
Exactly. What a time.
Yes, what a time. It's about time. Okay, to steal a line from BoJack, this is a story about time. And it's about time that the story was told. Sorry.
That's great.
I mean, you're not wrong. You're not wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. So we will be back tomorrow for all you listeners. Luckily, not tomorrow for us. But tomorrow for all you listeners with episodes 3 and 4. We would advise you to please watch them if you don't want to be even teased at the possibility of spoilers. We got dangerously close a couple of times, myself included. But I think we did okay. Anything else we want to say about the episodes before we close?
Yeah, we're back tomorrow.
Yeah, I mean,
right, that's true.
We can start start a new day tomorrow.
Yes, we got to get up tomorrow. We will get up and smoke cigarettes in bed. I'm sorry, we will not smoke cigarettes. I'm coming off very pro cigarette on this podcast.
Yeah, I apologize.
Okay, so I'm gonna leave it there before I say anything else about cigarettes. I'm gonna say cigarettes again. Thank you so much for joining us, and we will see you tomorrow. Bye-bye.